when many of us had not even traveled in an aeroplane, he traveled into the space, carried out experiments, did yoga, and spent 8 glorious days there. When asked how our country India looks from space, his famous line was, "Sare jahan se acha." Call of Duty, Real Soldiers, Real Stories, with a lot of awe and reverence, present to you Wing Commander Rakesh Sharma Ashok Chakra, the first Indian in space, in conversation with Poonam Joshi.
Welcome to Call of Duty, Real Soldiers, Real Stories. And in our series of bringing heroes to you, we have a special guest with us today. Because what he has done has never been done by any Indian. He went to space on the 3rd of April 1984. And it's none other than Wing Commander Rakesh Sharma Ashok Chakra. We welcome you today here, sir. The first thing that comes to my mind after welcoming you is to know about your childhood. So would you tell us something about your initial days?
Well, as a baby, I'm sure that my mother would have had to deal with all the mess I made. But apart from that, my story, I guess, is going to be quite devoid of, shall we say, suspense and stuff, because I had made up my mind to join the Air Force when I was 5 years old. And how did that happen? It happened because I had an uncle of mine who was training to be a fighter pilot, and we were his local guardians in Secunderabad. The Vampire, which was the first jet aircraft to grace the Indian skies, used to fly overhead, and I was quite captivated with the whistling sound it made. And then this uncle of mine took me and made me sit into that cockpit during one of his parade practices. And when I saw the array of dials and controls in the cockpit, I was kind of hooked for life. And I just wanted to be in one of those machines and make that whistling sound. So my mind was made up since then as to what I would want to be. So I was stuck with the Air Force right from that age. And I can't say that I was a brilliant student. I used to be punished quite often for staring out of the window while the classes were on. But I was fortunate enough to have passed the NDA exam when I grew up. Of course, it was a heck of a problem to convince my parents that I wanted to go fly. And the reason for that is that the uncle who we were local guardians of died in an air crash very early after he got commissioned. So I had to come up with arguments which quite obviously were not all that convincing to my parents, like telling them that it's equally dangerous to be crossing the road and being run over, or slipping on a bar of soap while having a bath. But whatever it is, I think my parents saw that I was being stubborn and I wasn't giving up the dream. So they didn't want to, God bless them, stand in the way. And finally, they greenlit my decision. And there I was in the National Defense Academy. Yeah, and after that, of course, like anybody else, there were ups and downs, and there was tension whether or not one would get the solo. Because if you don't get your solo, then you're out back on the streets. And I felt that I would be no good for anything else. Although I did have a plan B, and I was doing pre-medicine. So if I hadn't made a pilot, I think I would have made a surgeon. God was kind, and here I am. And that particular journey has taken me all through. And I got a whole lot of breaks being a lucky guy. And well, that's my story.
I must say, what diverse choice of career. Air Force and surgeon. I mean, it's amazing. And that uncle of yours, we need to thank him for getting that spirit, you know, in you, you know. And that's how we got Wing Commander Rakesh Sharma. So the next question that I want to ask you is about your training at NDA. I'm sure, like whatever I've heard from everybody who comes on our podcast, it is another ball game altogether. It is interesting, it is funny, it is difficult. The type of things the cadets there do is different. Tell us about your experiences there.
Well, I told you that I wasn't too bright a student. Yeah, I would scrape through because I would study only the previous night for the exam. I was very keen on the outdoors, so I played a lot of cricket, gymnastics, and I didn't like to do anything indoors. I've always liked to feel the breeze on my face. But I think what India taught us really was how to pace oneself, because we do not have infinite energy. What I'm trying to get at is that every job, after a period of time, becomes boring. And therefore, you need, and including that of the astronaut, let me share. You need to pace yourself. And NDA taught us that, because the life was so hectic that if you wanted to give your best all the while, then today's problem, which we see in our youngsters of burnout, that would have happened to us. So the only way to survive there was to take it easy when you were not being watched, but to deliver the goods when it was required. And that has stood us in good stead. I mean, and I speak, I'm sure, for all Fauji's. And that is why, when called upon, they have always been able to deliver the goods, because there's always something left in the tank.
You got commissioned in 1970, and you were flying the supersonic jet fighters. And within 1 year, the Bangladesh Liberation War happened in 1972. And you flew 21 missions in a MiG-21 fighter jet as a young pilot. What was the feeling and what were the experiences?
Well, like I told you, I've been a very lucky guy in the sense that when I joined the Air Force, the MiG-21 had just entered the inventory of the Indian Air Force. And as usually happens, that the initial lot of pilots who are deputed to fly those aeroplanes and who operationalize that aircraft, they're all very senior and experienced pilots. But it was soon evident that these experienced pilots, in order to pursue their career paths, they would have to take on different responsibilities and get out of the cockpit. And now who's going to fill that? So they decided to catch pilots young, and there I was, and I happened to get selected. So that is why, with hardly any experience, and that was part of the experiment, we were detailed to fly this aeroplane and convert onto this aircraft. And it so happened that the MiG-21 had a squadron in Adampur, which is fairly close to the border. And that's when India and Pakistan decided to go to war. And the MiG-21s were obviously inducted, even though they were new aeroplanes. And I was a rookie pilot with my squadron, but I got a chance to fly in that in that particular war. You wanted to know how it felt? Well, I had only about 50 hours of experience on this aircraft, so I would be mispresenting if I tell you that I was fearless. I wasn't. I was underconfident. But it isn't as if I was given very difficult missions. But the very fact that I was able to fly and take part in that operation, while looking for enemy aeroplanes near the border, it's just that Pakistan wasn't aware at that time how long the skirmish is going to last. So they were kind of preserving their resources, and they didn't want to take on Indian fighters, so which worked for me. I'm not very sure how I would have fared with just 50 hours under my belt. But there it was. 21 missions. And after that, again, I was very lucky because the Tejas program was somewhere on a distant horizon, and they needed more test pilots. And again, the seniority profile of test pilots was high, so they decided to catch them young. Again, there I was, young and fully operational on the MiG-21, and then I got selected for the test pilots course.
So your training started really very early, for I think destiny knew that you had to do something big. So they prepared you well in advance. Just a way to look at it, I think, like you often say, you were lucky. I think you were good with what you were doing.
I've been often accused about my views on luck, but I do believe that luck does play a part in every endeavor. And that is because if you're not there at the right time, at the right place, then you are not one of the probables from amongst whom selections are made. And in any case, there is no perfect selection system. Under these constraints, ultimately it boils down to being at the right place at the right time and fitting the bill of what the qualification requirements are at a given point of time for a given job that you're being selected for. So when all of this comes together, that is what luck is. You can call it destiny, you can call it luck. Yes, I do agree that you have to at least be hardworking, as the Gita wants you to be. But hard work alone is not going to help. I mean, let's start off. We don't choose our parents, so we don't know what kind of nutrition we are going to get when we are growing up. So that is your first lucky break as to how you're growing up, where you're growing up. But having said that, we've seen so many examples. You take ISRO, all the scientists who have excelled. Everybody's story starts in a village, going to a small school, carrying books on their head, walking for kilometers. Now that's all hard work. But there are an equal and more number of people who've done just that, and we haven't heard about them. So luck does play a part, and it has in my case.
Luck and karma, that's a strong, lethal combination. It always works. And for you, it definitely did. And this brings me to the next question about the training at NDA and later at the Air Force Academy. Was it tough or a cakewalk for you? Also, if you could remember any interesting or hilarious incident during your training?
Yeah, the training was tough. You see, the thing is that I'm unable to delineate between what is extremely interesting and what is extremely difficult. So when things are interesting and exciting, somehow the degree of difficulty doesn't impact you. You know, your heart rate goes up because you've never done something before, and you're as interested as your instructor to see if you're going to hack it. And so there is that bit of suspense. And of course, the fear is that if you don't, then there goes your dream. So that is what gives you the tension. But I do believe that a certain amount of tension is necessary for you to perform optimally. So, but if you can, as the NDA prayer says, keep your head while others around you are losing theirs. That's what it's all about. That's what growing up is all about, whether in the civil street or whether in the services.
Keep your head high when the others are losing it. My God, that's such a profound statement, and it holds good for any profession. Now, coming to the much awaited section of our podcast today, the travel into space. In 1984, when most of us had not even traveled in an aeroplane, you were preparing to visit the space. How did this happen? How were you selected?
Luck, like I said. I've given you a brief background saying that the last fighter development program was the HF-24 or the Marut. And after that, for years, we have not done anything in that line. And the Air Force felt a need to have more test pilots and relatively junior test pilots, because flight testing, aircraft development, requires long lead times. It requires the test team to remain invested in a particular project for longer periods of time. And therefore, it was necessary to, again, catch younger flyers, train them as test pilots. So then, again, there I was. I was young and I was qualified because of the previous lucky decisions made by Air Headquarters. And I was a test pilot. And the Russians who were training us, they were told that, listen, we want the space flight to happen by so-and-so date. Just like today, elections were around the corner. So the Russian says, okay, if you're putting a time constraint, then please give us test pilots, because test pilots are, well, almost there, because spaceflight essentially is an extension of military aviation, the initial part, that is. And so I was young and I was fit and I was a test pilot. I mean, it all came together and that's how I got selected.
So luck has always been playing a very integral part in your life, and I think with everybody.
You, along with Wing Commander Ravish Malhotra, went through the training. But finally, it was you who got selected. What was the reaction of your family when you were selected to do something that was unheard of in those days? Because I remember a lot of convincing had to be done for joining the Indian Air Force, and now you were all set to go into space.
Well, I think the reaction was quite like any parent's reaction. I've never really spoken about this with my mom or my father. But all I know is that on the 8 days I was up there, my mother had an Akhand Path running 24/7. So I think she had some divine support, which must have made her go through this particular episode. Having seen me come through a war, having seen me come through my test flying career, I guess she must have convinced herself that somebody up there is listening to her. And I think that's how it worked out for her and for my father.
And what about your wife? What was her reaction and support?
My wife was in Moscow at that time, along with my son. And in a way, even my wife was lucky, because my son had developed some pain in the abdomen, and the Soviet doctors felt maybe it's appendicitis. So he was in hospital and my wife was tending to him. So her focus was our son right through that week when I was in space. So that's it. Plus, I think a point here must be made, like every Air Force wife, I would say every 4G's wife today, they are aware that our careers are not the kind of careers where you're sitting in a wood-paneled office with an air conditioner and a guy's getting you cups of hot coffee. So they are, I would say, they're half prepared for that knock on the door. So I think that is what prepares them for this unusual life of weight, which is why on my last day of flying, I mean, I did go home with a bouquet of flowers and thanked her for having waited all these years.
No wonder the wives are called the force multipliers in the defense forces. They add to the power of their men by just being the silent ranks. The training process must have been very difficult, and I'm sure that time we did not have a lot of equipment, training facilities. I don't know what the space program was and what the facilities were. Could you throw some light on that? Did the NDA training help you? Because I remember my husband telling me that you had come to NDA when he was there, and you did say the somersaults in NDA helped you to train for this mission.
Yeah, it like I had already alluded to the way we used to pace ourselves in NDA. Similarly, the difficult part of this training was that we had to learn a foreign language, Russian. The entire ground subjects were in Russian. The entire communication during the flight was in Russian. Mission control talked only in Russian. So that was difficult. But the technical part wasn't all that difficult. Fortunately, at least the technical Russian language, willy-nilly, was English with ski attached to it. Like technical was takhnicheski, you know. So that was easier. And once again, if I may remind you that when something is exciting and you're doing it for the first time, you automatically find the focus. And in that sense, one doesn't get overwhelmed because of these aspects. And I think Ravish and myself, we were both supporting each other through this. We were not challenged enough because, let's be fair, the space flight was scientific in content, but it had very political aims. So therefore, the Russians also knew that essentially, and at that time, India was not running any manned space program. So it isn't as if we would be carrying all that we were learning, and it wasn't as if the Russian training system would be tested. They didn't have a reputation to protect as trainers, because they knew that, you know, we are not going to be going and joining our space program or anything. So it was need to know till such time the demands of safety were met, and then that's about it. In that sense, it wasn't very challenging.
So now we come to the final day, your 8 glorious days in space after all the training was done.
And on this note, we take a pause to listen to the story of those 8 glorious days and much more on the space journey. Do join us on the 15th of November. Until then, keep listening.